Members, I'd like to call the meeting of the Higher Education Policy and Finance Committee together to order. We have another lengthy agenda, so we'd like to begin on time. And we'll start, I think, with the minutes. If we need somebody that would be willing to read them quick and then make a motion. Representative.
Mr. Chair, I move the passage of the minutes.
Okay, we have a motion. Any comments, corrections on the minutes? If not, the minutes, we need to vote on the minutes. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
And opposed? And the minutes are approved. Okay, to begin our hearing today, we have a couple of familiar faces. One a little more familiar than the other because he's been here more times. But we appreciate both of you being here today to talk about the Minnesota State Grant Program and the projections. And in light of the budget being released today by the governor, it's all important to us. So I'd like to ask you to begin and start by identifying yourself and move on.
Thank you, Chair.
Yes.
Thank you, Chair Norness. My name is Sheila Wright. I'm director of the Minnesota Office of Higher Education. And twice each year, our agency produces a projection on spending for the Minnesota State Grant Program, which is, as you know, a need-based financial aid program for Minnesota students attending colleges throughout the state. These projections are done November the 1st and February 15th of each year. We appreciate the opportunity to present the February 15th projections on the spendings for the fiscal year 2013. The Minnesota State Grant Program has brought higher education into reach for hundreds of thousands of students since 1967. And these students range in age from 18 to 65, and they are pursuing everything from certificate programs, associate degrees, and bachelor's degrees. Without a doubt, Minnesota has one of the best educated adult populations in the country and among the highest college participation rates in the country. And in part, I believe, because of this program that maintains the promise of education for our citizens. So with that, I'd like to introduce members of my team who will go through the detailed budget with you, Dr. Mark Mitsikanis and Ms. Meredith Fergus from the Office of Higher Education. Meredith especially will walk you through the projections, and we are always, as always, willing to spend time with you to discuss this valuable program to our state. Thank you so very much for having us.
Mr. Chair and members, as Meredith comes up, let me make sure that all the members have copies of both the presentation document that we're working from and then the projections report itself, which I believe we'll be referring to a couple times through the process here. So. I know they were being handed out before, but it is important that all the members have copies. Let me get just a brief overview, and then Meredith will get down into the weeds, because this is a complicated program. We've been before you before a bit talking about the details, but because it is a projection and it really goes to directly to the budgeting process, it's important that you understand how we got to where the results in the reports themselves. We've tried very hard to improve the projection process over the years. We've made changes. Both procedurally, in some ways, at the urging of the legislature, we have meetings before the release of this report with all the stakeholders. We met last Friday with both people from the legislative staff, and a number of people from the institutions. In fact, I'd say I think it's the largest turnout we've ever had at a meeting last Friday. So there's a strong interest on the part of all the people that are impacted by this program in the process. So we've tried to improve our information flow. We've changed our modeling a bit. We're more integrated with management budgets, revenue forecasts. So we're trying to become integrated with the rest of the budget process and the revenue forecasting process as well. One final point on this, and then Meredith can get started with more of the details, is that we plan to do more of this. We're trying to become a bit more sophisticated in this process, especially when it comes to changes in the economy, enrollment changes that so dramatically impact the demand of this program. So that's something we're working on now, and we hope to be able to implement in the future date. So with that, I'll turn it over to Meredith.
Okay. Please identify yourself for the record, please.
Thank you, Chair Norness. For the record, my name is Meredith Fergus. I'm a policy analyst at the Minnesota Office of Higher Education. It is my responsibility to calculate the spending projections for the Minnesota State Grant Program. I just kind of want to start with an overview of the grant program, just to remind us. The Minnesota State Grant is Minnesota's primary need-based grant program. To apply, students complete the FAFSA, or the Free Application for Federal Student Aid. They must be Minnesota residents attending Minnesota institutions and be U.S. citizens or eligible non-citizens. In fiscal year 10, which was our large spending year, we spent $168.5 million and awarded grants to 103,000 students. When we calculate the projections of state grant spending, we start with the most complete application pool. So I took all of the data submitted by students who applied for state grants in fiscal year 10. We then add in several economic and cost variables to kind of calculate spending projections for the current year as well as the next two fiscal years, which is what you need for a budget. Those economic and cost variables include tuition and fee increase estimates, an estimate of the increase in enrollment for Minnesota resident undergraduates who may apply for the program. We also incorporate data on wages of Minnesota tax filers and adjusted gross income of families. We also have to include changes to program items such as the federal Pell Grant, as well as any changes to the federal need analysis, which is that calculation that uses FAFSA data to calculate a family's expected family contribution, or EFC. I'm going to start with tuition and fee increases. And I would encourage anyone to interrupt at any time with questions, because there are quite a few data tables in here. For fiscal year 10 and 11, the chart shows you what the actual tuition and fee increases were for Minnesota State Grant applicants. For fiscal years 12 and 13, I've also included what the projected estimates are. These estimates are gathered from system and institutional representatives each November and February. And of course, as many of you know, MinSCU and the University of Minnesota have not settled on a final tuition fee increase figure, so this is just an estimate. We did verify these estimates last Friday with system representatives.
Mr. Chair, members, let me just point out on those tuition estimates, especially from the university and from MinSCU. They, of course, are well aware of the budget situation, and they have been thinking about this for the last 6 months. If anyone's attended the Board of Regents meetings, it's clear that they have the budget impact in mind. Of course, they don't know what it's going to be, but they've been mindful of it and thoughtful of it. So when we do try to test these numbers against the people that have been involved in those conversations, I think it's important for you to know that there's been an exchange of ideas all along the way here.
Ms. Burgess.
Thank you, Chair Nornes. If you look under the fiscal year 12 column, you will see that column has two entries. The first is the ERA portion of the tuition rate, and that is the portion of tuition increases that were bought down at MinSCU in, I believe, last session or the session before. I can't recall at this moment. Those increases would apply for fiscal year 12 in addition to a 5% increase on top of that. The next large assumption we build in is enrollment. And what we're thinking of here is enrollment of Minnesota resident undergraduates, students who may qualify for a Minnesota State Grant. And what you see before you is the same 4 years, fiscal years 10, 11, 12, and 13. The fiscal year 10 column is actually one of the most important columns. Fiscal year 10 is the year we saw enrollment at Minnesota institutions increase by over 5%. The actual number was 5.37%, which is the largest reported increase since 1980. Those students enrolled in Minnesota institutions, they applied for financial aid, and they became eligible for a Minnesota State Grant. That is the primary driver of our spending currently. What you see in fiscal year 11 is the current year enrollment increase. We're back to a more moderate growth scenario, and you see that moderate growth scenario continues into 12 and 13. This information is also provided by system and institutional representatives. The third item we build in is change in annual wages and family adjusted gross income of Minnesota tax filers. This information we gather each February and November from Minnesota Management and Budget. They do a sample of Minnesota tax filers and provide us with the change in those two estimates. What we do is we use that estimate as a predictor for how income and wages will change for our applicant pool. Essentially, we say, what is the income change for Minnesota tax filers? And we apply that same income change to students applying for the Minnesota State Grant. This gives them gives us a better idea of how much state grant aid they will qualify for. The one thing it does not account for, actually, is income shifts. What we saw in fiscal year 10 is we saw dramatic income declines for families at 60,000 AGI and under. we did not see those same income declines for families 60,000 and over. However, in fiscal year 11, we're seeing income declines across the board.
Mr. Chair, members, if I could point you to the report itself on page 14. Actually, it's got a very nice graph of this impact, the effect of this kind of income distribution change. And it tells the story, I think, in a pretty good way about why state grant changes, the demand for it changes, things like that. And this essentially shows what Ms. Fergus has described with the chart that you have before you. But you see, obviously, from that graph on page 14, the declines are below 60,000 and the increase is above 60,000 in average income.
The one thing I would add, Chair, to this, to Mr. Michoukonis' comments, is that we actually found this income pattern across all institutions, all types of institutions. So Minsky 2 years saw a similar income pattern. The University of Minnesota saw a similar income change pattern. This was pretty consistent across the board for higher education.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Atkins?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just want to make sure I understand the chart. It is a very lovely graph. I just want to make sure I understand it on page 14. So if those folks that were making less than $60,000 a year are making even less, is that correct? And then if you're making more than 60 grand, particularly if you're making $140,000 a year, your income went up. So if you're above 60, you're making more money. You're below 60, you're making quite a bit less over the last couple of years, last 3 years.
Chair Nornes and Representative Atkins, yes. I wouldn't really say that the families earning 60,000 or more, their income grew substantially. It's just they stabilized and a few of them did saw an increase. That's what drove the average up, yes. Most likely what we saw was that the job losses and the income losses in that first part of the economic downturn impacted families whose primary income was at the $60,000 or less. So they lost their wage increases and their jobs first, was how I'd more likely put it. In fiscal year 11, we are not seeing increases at the upper incomes. We are seeing very small changes as well as declines.
Representative Atkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And but if you're making over 130 or 140, if I'm reading this right, you actually got a pretty good bump the last couple of years. So in spite of the economy being in the crapper, if you're making 140 grand a year or more, you saw a very substantial increase relative to, especially if you compare it to people that are making 20 or 10 or 20 grand, who've seen their income eroded dramatically. Is that fair to say?
Chair Nornes, Representative, yes, that is exactly what the data showed.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Bennion.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Let me just be clear, Ms. Fergus, that I've got the sample in this graph are people who filed the FAFSA and who are in one of the institutions covered here or who applied for the grant. Can you define for me who's in this sample on this graph, please?
Ms. Fergus.
Chair Nornes and Representative, the students in this graph are students who applied for financial aid in both years and actually enrolled in college. So what we see are students who in fiscal year 9 may have started as a freshman and then also enrolled as a sophomore in their second year. I wanted to make sure that we were collecting actual individual student data between the 2 years and not relying on averages for this type of analysis.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. I just want to be clear. Is getting a little confused here whether or not we are making statements about the entire population of Minnesota or just the students who, just the families of the students who are in this sample. Thank you.
Ms. Fergus, proceed.
Thank you, Chair Nornes. What you see on the display before you now is the actual spending projections that are contained in the report. How we do this is we start with a base spending. So we start essentially with what we would have spent in fiscal year 11 without rationing. And then we add in the various changes according to the assumption we've implemented. So the first change is, of course, that change in wages, adjusted gross income, as well as changes to how the EFC is calculated for families and students. That is actually a negative number for next year. There are a couple of reasons for that. Students who saw an income decline may have become Pell Grant eligible. Once they are Pell Grant eligible, the amount of Minnesota State Grant might have declined for that family. The other thing we might have seen that does include some families who income stabilized, but also there was a slight change in federal need analysis that allowed families to qualify for slightly more Pell Grant based on their EFC. That's kind of the most difficult of the numbers to understand. The next line is costs of tuition fee increases. We build in tuition fee increases for institutions who are below the statutory tuition fee maximums, and this is how much that change costs for fiscal years 12 and 13. Then we build in the enrollment increases that we assume for fiscal years 12 and 13. That is more moderate change. The next line is adjustment for applicant pool. Since we are basing our projection on students who applied for Minnesota State Grant in fiscal year 10, we have to make sure we isolate program changes that may impact their eligibility. In fiscal year 10, students were eligible for a Minnesota State Grant in their ninth semester of enrollment, what we typically refer to as fifth year seniors. That is one of the program eligibility parameters we eliminated last year when the initial program shortfall occurred. So I have to eliminate those students from eligibility for fiscal years 12 and 13. And so that's what you see on the adjustment for applicant pool line. Those students are no longer eligible for a Minnesota State Grant. What you see at the bottom line is for fiscal year 12, we are projecting just under $159 million in state grant spending with no changes, and $164 million for fiscal years 13. The next chart shows you how that compares to base appropriations. Base appropriations are on this chart are the state appropriation of $144.14 million. If you compare it to the spending projection, I show a spending shortfall of just under $15 million for the first year and just under $20 million for the second year, for a total of $35.54 million.
Mr. Chair and members, the rest of the presentation actually has to do with rationing. As you all know, we're rationing the state grant program the current year, and going forward into 12 and 13, there are governor's budget does not include any recommendations to the actual changes to the program. So we've of course been considering rationing going forward in order to make sure, as Ms. Fergus has pointed out, the demand and the resources are roughly equivalent as they need to be. We can't spend more money than's made available in the appropriation. So what you have on this chart is simply the current statute. We may have discussed this in the past and before you, but rationing simply means that we need to increase this, both the student share and make some adjustments to the assigned family responsibility in order to make sure that resources and demands are fairly equivalent. And again, there's a few charts that kind of describe this process graphically that may make it more easy to understand.
Ms. Fergus.
Chair Nornes, I just wanted to give you kind of an idea of how rationing works and how you would see it displayed graphically. What you see before you is the design for shared responsibility. This is how Minnesota State Grant Awards are allocated across the income scale for students in a four-year program. Rationing requires that first we apply a surcharge to the applicant's assigned family responsibility. So what I like to say is we chop off the higher income families first. And we do that by adding a surcharge. Current year, it was 20% surcharge. For the fiscal years 12 and 13, a surcharge of that magnitude would not necessarily be required. The second thing we do is we apply a surcharge or a percentage increase in the applicant's assigned student responsibility, and this is done across the board. Every student sees this cut in the step number two. So essentially, if you were to go back, the entire green area is $160 million. Now it's $144. That's how we ration in the state grant program. I should mention that these red areas are not to scale, of course. For the rationing parameters that we've given as an example in the report, the actual change would be approximately $175 per student. Half of that would be allocated to the assigned student responsibility and half to the assigned family responsibility to make up those two portions. So this is most definitely not to scale. What you see now is how rationing was implemented for fiscal year 11. For fiscal year 11, we needed to cut approximately $35 million in demand out of the program in a single year because the enrollment surge occurred after fiscal year 10 had started, and we made the decision to fully fund awards that first year. So what we did is this is what fiscal year 11 would look like in the red if we had not cut awards, and the blue shows what awards occurred, total spending by income category after rationing occurred. What you should see is that on the left, the difference between the red and the blue bars is smaller than on the right. The first, for the less than $10,000 income category, it was about a 14% cut in total spending. For the $70,000 or more income family, it was a 47% cut in state grant spending. Those, and it does increase as you move towards the higher income levels.
Mr. Chair and members, with that, we complete our presentation of the report itself and open to any questions.
Representative Atkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And it would be your slide number 4. You have a projected tuition increase for MinSCU's 2 and 4 year institutions in the University of Minnesota of 5% per year. What drove that 5% figure? Is that based on receiving the forecasted amounts from the legislature, or is that anticipating a cut?
Chair Norris and Representative Atkins, that number is actually us kind of weighing the kind of, I don't want to say talk that we hear, but also talking with the MinSCU office and the University of Minnesota to kind of gauge whether if we set a tuition estimate of 5%, essentially if it's in the right ballpark. Because we don't know what the final tuition increase is going to be, we knew that we were going into a budget deficit, and that most likely higher education would become one of the areas for cuts, and so we wanted to set it at a number that gave us a basis for determining what state grant awards would be, but in the absence of a final number. I guess that's how I would caveat it.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, is it
Representative Atkins?
I guess the question would be more so for you, Mr. Chairman. The phase one, which the governor vetoed recently, singled out higher ed for twice the cut of any other area. And I don't know why we were picking on higher ed, but I believe it was an 18% cut as opposed to the 9% that everybody else was taking. Can you give us just maybe foreshadow what to anticipate when the majority's budget comes out? Are we going to be looking at no greater than the same proportionate, or are we going to hit higher ed twice as hard again like we did in phase one?
I don't know if I've got a good answer for you. I'm still waiting to digest the governor's budget to see what he had intended for higher ed, and he's not treating it very kindly either from what I hear. So we'll take a look at what he's suggesting, and then we'll go from there, and then we'll eventually see the revenue forecast, and from that we'll have to determine what our share of those cuts will have to be to get to that, you know, balanced budget in the end. So it's not good. You know, I wish it was really good news, but it's probably not.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I don't have my head buried in the sand either, but I was extraordinarily disappointed with the fact that the majority party singled out higher ed for twice the cut of anybody else. I thought that was just blatantly wrong-headed, in the wrong direction when we're trying to create jobs. And I'm trying to, in as kind a way as I can, anticipate what direction we may go with this committee down the road. But obviously folks are going to have to take budget cuts. I just don't think that we ought to be smacking around higher ed when that is the primary job creation driver that we have in the state of Minnesota. And I get a little bit concerned when I see projected tuition increases at 5%, when if we simply pass through a twice the average figure budget cut from this body to the four-year institutions and the University of Minnesota, we may well be seeing 20 or 30% increases in tuition if it's just literally passed through. And I, as far as I know, I don't think that, well, I guess we'd see what the two various boards would do, but if you're on a receiving grants and at the same time the state grant program is taking a whack, that students see a 20 or 30% increase in their tuition, we may have a lot of folks heading off to some other institution or just plain dropping out. And I hope that that doesn't come true, but I certainly didn't want to stand idly by and wait for the majority's budget to come out and see yet again another twice the budget cut to our higher ed institutions. Thank you, Mr. Chair, for tolerating my
no problem
little rant.
And hopefully we can all work together. Is that what we want in the end?
Always.
So, may not just be the majority, maybe it be, you know, all of us.
Well, so far, Mr. Chair, every amendment that I've offered, even the good ones, have been voted down on a partisan basis, so I'm not really feeling the love right now. But I expect in this committee we'll have an opportunity to work in more of a bipartisan fashion.
Mine was supported on a bipartisan.
It was. Yeah. I had a necktie with hearts on it, and I lost it, so I lost the love. I'm sorry. Yes.
Mr. Chair and members.
Mr. Connors.
I just wanted to bring to your attention to make sure that there's no surprises in the future. Potential changes to this program that are not included in this report because they just happened yesterday. It's the president's budget. It does have some impacts on the Pell program. And in and of themselves, I think that they do have a very minor impact on the state grant. However, there's other discussions going on at the congressional level that could have a dramatic impact on the state grant. So Ms. Ferguson can talk about those details.
Chair Nornes, I would actually clarify what Mr. Michikanis has said. The two proposals yesterday, the one from the president as well as the one from the House of Representatives, the president's budget cuts year-round Pell. Minnesota State Grant already assumes students get a year-round Pell even if they're not eligible for it. So that proposal actually does not have a significant impact on the Minnesota State Grant spending. The larger impact is in the House of Representatives proposal. They are proposing an $845 decrease to the Pell Grant maximum award. The way the current state grant program is structured, that Pell decrease would be automatically filled by the Minnesota State Grant, which would drive our shortfall numbers up. Just so you're aware, it's a very significant shortfall increase should that happen. Most likely, given where Congress ends up, it's probably going to be somewhere in the middle, but we don't know that final number yet.
Well, I know you have a difficult job,
yeah.
And we appreciate you doing it.
Sorry, Mr. Chair, I was going to take myself off the list, and then that was the very question I was going to ask about. Could we get that information of what happens if the House of Representatives proposal goes through and what the effect is on the state grant program? I know you probably don't have those numbers right here now, but on this committee, we have to keep an eye on how the federal and the state interact, especially as it affects the state grant program, so that would be helpful.
The House of Representatives proposal essentially states that the maximum Pell Grant would drop to $4,705. It currently is at $5,550. That would be an across-the-board cut to every Pell Grant-eligible student in Minnesota of $845. There are 134,000 Pell Grant students in Minnesota, so that would mean a loss of $113 million in Pell Grant funding for the state. And more students enroll each year, so the number will only go up.
Representative Benson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And this probably is an add-on to Representative Morrow's, and that just so that I have clarification, would we have any maintenance of effort requirement that would cause us to say we've got to make up that difference, or no?
Ms. Ferguson.
Chair Nornes, Representative, no. We are not subject to a maintenance of effort requirement for that part of the proposal.
All right. Thank you.
And if there are no more questions, we'll let you find a better seat. And at this time, we'll be hearing from the financial aid administrators, and Peter Zetterberg is first on the list. Peter? There he is. Peter, welcome to the committee, and identify yourself for the record, please.
Chair Nornes, my name is Peter Zetterberg, and I'm here representing the University of Minnesota, and I will be extremely brief. I just want to impress on the committee the importance of the state grant program to University of Minnesota students. This year we have 10,500 students who are state grant recipients. That's almost exactly one-third of our undergraduate enrollment of students from Minnesota, so it's very significant. Most of those students would not be at the University of Minnesota without the state grant program. Its importance can be put as simply as that. The state grant program is also kind of one-third of the total need-based assistance we provide to students from Minnesota. Approximately one-third comes from Pell Grants, One-third comes from state grants, and one-third comes from our own Institutional Promise Scholarship Program. With those three combined, we're able to provide the lowest income students, zero EFC students, with total grant assistance of just more than $12,000, which covers their tuition. And going forward, we hope, of course, to be able to do that. So that's basically all I have to say. This program is extremely important to the University of Minnesota. It's key to our undergraduate educational efforts, and without it, we would really all be in very serious trouble. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions? Otherwise, thank you for your testimony. Chris Holling and Carla Seymour.
Welcome. Thank you, Chair Nornes. My name is Chris Holling. I am the System Director for Student Financial Aid in the Office of the Chancellor at the Minnesota State Colleges and Universities. And with me today is Carla Seymour, who is the Financial Aid Director at Noble Ramsey Community College. And I, too, will be brief, perhaps not quite as brief as Mr. Zetterberg, but first of all, thank you for allowing us to testify, and I want to thank you for creating and sustaining the state grant program for all of these years. It is a very generous program. I think it's one of the largest programs in the nation, and on a per-student basis, it may be perhaps the most generous. And it is a tremendous benefit for our students and students all across the state, so I just want to thank you for that. As Peter said, the grant is very, very important to our students. In fiscal year 2010, just over 57,000 MinSCU students received almost $57 million in state grants. And over the last eight fiscal years, over 350,000 of our students have received a state grant, totaling about $388 million. The amount that the students received peaked in 2007. But with the reductions that are being made for the rationing in fiscal year 11, the total state grants will be for that year roughly back to about where they were a decade ago. And needless to say, all of those students have costs that are significantly higher than they were a decade ago. The effect of the rationing across the system is something we'll be able to accurately assess as we get farther into the spring term. We do know that it has affected a large number of students, and you'll be hearing from the students a little bit later. And I've also asked Ms. Seymour to come here today to talk a little bit about the impact of the state grant program and maybe of that rationing on one of our campuses and the students there.
Ms. Seymour, welcome. Identify yourself,
thank
please.
You. My name is Carla Seymour. I am the Financial Aid Director at Anoka Ramsey Community College. On behalf of our students, I would like to thank you for your support of the state grant program. This program has served thousands of students at Anoka Ramsey Community College. It is a very valuable grant to our students in obtaining their educational goals. Anoka Ramsey Community College campuses in Cambridge and Coon Rapids serves more than 12,000 learners of all ages. The average age of our student body wide, college-wide, for fiscal year 2010 was 24.6 years. I have worked for the state of Minnesota in the field of financial aid for 20 years and have seen many changes along the way. Anoka Ramsey student enrollment has grown 28% in the last 5 years. That would be fiscal year 2006 through fiscal year 2010. However, we saw a 76% increase in financial aid applications within the same time. That alone is a statement of itself. And our current applications continue to rise. As we work at our window, it's amazing to hear some of the dire situations which students find themselves. The more common things we are hearing are loss of a job with a long-time employer, changes in marital status, foreclosures, and bankruptcies. Students are looking for resources more than ever to help their educational and living expenses. Unfortunately, they are also taking out more student loans at a greater volume.
There is no doubt rationing of the state grant program came at a critical time. With the high enrollment, with the change of the economy, it's more than ever important to protect the state grant program. Despite the fact that Anoka-Ramsey Community College is the lowest cost tuition in Minnesota, students still struggle to pay the entire cost of attendance. Cost of attendance not only includes the tuition and fees, you're looking at room and board, transportation, personal, miscellaneous, and books and supplies. The state grant program can make the difference of attending college for or not for many of our students. We saw an increase of 63% in state grant recipients in the last 5 years, again, fiscal year 2006 through fiscal year 2010. There is a need for the state grant program. I can also tell you the financial aid human resources are very stressed, working many long hours to accommodate all the last-minute application requests, rationing of applications, and to stay compliant with all the regulations that can be extremely challenging. This was amplified, again, as I said, by the rationing of the state grant program this fiscal year. When it was determined that there was a surplus at the end of fall, our offices then needed to recalculate several hundred application award packages to do the increase of the state grant. This was, of course, a bonus to the students, but again, additional challenging time for the financial aid staff. At this time, I hope I've provided a feel for the value of the state grant program and what it is currently like in the trenches. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Any questions from members?
If I might just add a couple of comments.
Mr. Hawley.
First, to elaborate a little bit on what Carla has said, I would also say that the stress she's referring to in the offices is not just physical. There's, I think, a definite emotional stress in no one I know is in financial aid for any reason other than that they really truly want to help students realize their dreams. And in the current conditions, they often simply don't have the resources they can offer to that student. And that's really very, very difficult to have to tell thousands and thousands of students day after day that you simply don't have what they need to help them. I would echo Ms. Seymour's comments that across the system we have seen financial aid applications increase at about double the rate that our enrollment has increased. And the eligibility of those students who file those financial aid applications has increased probably half again. There's definitely a tremendous need. The last comments that I'd like to offer are simply some thoughts about that this program has served the state very, very well, but its current design is nearly 30 years old, and the state and its citizens, our students, and our economy have all changed, and I have, I guess, three brief thoughts for possible changes you may want to consider if you have to look at the future of the program in a broad way. One of them is that, as you heard from the Office of Higher Education, the program is currently structured, works in almost a sort of a reciprocal dance with the Pell Grant. If the Pell Grant increases for a student, that student's state grant decreases, and vice versa. At a time where we're looking at maybe the worst economic conditions that certainly most of us can remember, I wonder if we might not want to take another look at whether that's the best way to invest these financial aid dollars. If a student is receiving a Pell Grant, they are by definition the lowest income students. And if they receive an increase in Pell Grant, we don't want to also decrease their state grant at the same time. Secondly, the state grant program serves most students in the state very well, but there's a category of students that I don't think it serves as well as it perhaps it should. Students who attend less than full-time, but who also work part-time, are not really treated in the same way that full-time students or students with no income are treated. Just to illustrate, full-time for the state grant program is 15 credits. If a student is perhaps working 20 or 25 hours a week, they may feel that the course load they can handle is 9 credits. That is 60% of a full-time enrollment. They do not receive 60% of their full-time grant. In fact, it's very, very likely that they may not get a grant at all. The way that the formula treats students in that particular situation is, I think, unfair and maybe should be looked at again. And I would suggest that many times these are single parents with children responsibilities at home, and they are trying to put themselves in a position to get a better job, to be better citizens of the state, and those may be, in fact, the very students that we ought to be encouraging with this program the most. And that leads me to a third thought, which is that it may be time for a thoughtful and thorough examination of shared responsibility in all of its aspects. It has been 27 years since the program was put in place. Maybe it is a time to it may be that we it serves our citizens in the best way that we can think of, but it may be time to take a real thorough look at that to see if, in fact, it still does what it did 30 years ago. And then lastly, I would make a suggestion that if we're going to look at the need for further rationing in the program, and it sounds like, based on some of the Pell numbers, that might be a reality, I would suggest that we have two mechanisms right now that you heard from Ms. Ferguson. One is a surcharge on the family contribution, and one is a reduction to all students, whether they have no income or a fair amount of income. I would suggest that we look at rationing in a way that helps the students from the lowest income the most, and that would be perhaps to do the surcharge on the family contributions. If the student has a low income, that's a low surcharge. If the family has a relatively high income, it's a bigger surcharge, and it protects the students at the lowest end of the income spectrum. In conclusion, I just again want to thank you for allowing us to testify and for continuing to fund the program. It makes a tremendous difference in the lives of our students, and we'd be happy to try to answer any questions.
We have a question from Representative Morrow.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to make sure that I'm clear, I think, Mr. Howling, because I was a little unclear when you said that using the word generous. I'm not sure I would use the word generous in this situation, so I wanted to check some numbers. And this is the 2008-09 annual survey report on state-sponsored student financial aid. And just for raw dollars, Minnesota is ranked 24th in the nation, and when you adjust it for population, Minnesota is the 18th state nation. Are you familiar with this report, sir?
I am, and that has, I think, deteriorated, quite frankly, over the last decade or so. I mean, to be perfectly honest. I still view it as a generous program in that it helps so many of our students, and it is above the average.
Mr. Chair, I agree with both that it helps a lot of students. I think we see a lot of them in the room, and I think we probably could also talk about whether it helps students sufficiently. And we saw the deficit number of about $34 million, a number that would go up under the Pell Grant concern that was raised earlier. Also, we just don't know what the rise in tuition is going to be. I know Representative Atkins mentioned 5% at the University of Minnesota. Of course, that chart says 6.7% when you get to your system, and that's not with knowing what the final budget cut number is going to be. So generous might be, yes, it helps a lot of people, but certainly I think we would both agree students are struggling to pay for tuition at your institution, my institution, and the other institutions in Minnesota.
That is absolutely true.
Any other comments, questions? If not, we'll be moving on here to thank you very much.
Thank you.
Dan Nelson and Jeff Olson. Welcome.
Thank you, Chairman Nornes and members. My name is Dan Nelson from Bethel University, and I've been working with financial aid since this program was young in 1974. And my colleague is Jeff Olson, who took my place as Director of Financial Aid a few years ago. We'd like to represent the private college, our colleagues at the 17 Minnesota private colleges, and give you a little information about how the state grant fits with other types of financial aid. But to start our presentation, let me simply say three things. First of all, the Minnesota State Grant helps make higher education affordable to needy students from lower-income Minnesota families, and that's the message you've heard from all of us today. Second, the Minnesota State Grant Program is a significant part of a financial aid package, including state, federal aid from the university, and also private financial aid. And third, the state grant gives students some educational options. We're going to go to a schematic that I'd like to show you. And I'll take a minute describing this because we'll build on this in the rest of the presentation. This is from the last year at our university before the recession, 2007-2008, where we enrolled about 2,000 students from the state of Minnesota. And we've taken those 2,000 students and we've sorted them by their need or family ability to pay. And so there are 20 columns, 20 bars. Each of those 20 represents about 100 students. So on the left-hand side is a group of 100 students where the family was expected to pay nothing or next to nothing. Over on the right-hand side represents the families that were expected to pay the entire cost of education, which in that year was a little over $34,000, which includes tuition and fees, room and board, living expenses, transportation, etc. The gap between the horizontal line that shows the price and the top of the bar is what needs to be covered by financial aid or by a variety of sources. And so I'm going to walk through and show you how the various programs fit together to put together a financial aid package for these students. The first program and the kind of the foundational program is the federal Pell Grant. And that's represented in blue. In dark blue. I'm going to make sure my color scheme is correct. And as you can see, the federal Pell Grant, as Chris Halling stated, goes to the neediest of the needy students. At Bethel in this year, there are about 17% of our students received federal Pell Grants. And you can see that just it's only on the far left-hand side. Layer on top of that, the Minnesota State Grant. The Minnesota State Grant goes up the line a little more, and it goes to low-income and lower-middle-income families. And it layers on top so that kind of the line that you see across there, that horizontal line, we call an equity line. What it tries to do is to level out the remaining amount of money that families have to come up with. That's why it's called an equity line. I'll show you the rest of the story, and then I'll come back and talk about this a little bit. But the next thing we layer on as we're putting together financial aid packages for students is need-based grants from our university. And that, as you can see in the darker green, follows a similar pattern. We layer that on top of the Minnesota State Grant. And then on top of that, we also have categorical and merit grants that are layered on top. And here's where you see for the first time that students who do not demonstrate financial need might qualify for a performance scholarship in music or an academic scholarship. We're Division III NCAA, so no athletic scholarships in there. And then the last type of gift aid that students get is private gift aid. This is from community scholarship organizations, Lions Clubs, American Legion, and such. And so at this point, I'll pause to show that the neediest students at Bethel in 07-08 got financial aid from important sources, from the federal government, the state government, and the school itself, and private sources, that really helped narrow the gap between the cost of attendance and what their family was expected to pay. So this is the equity concept in financial aid. And now this next part won't surprise you. We'll layer on top of this the loans that these families take out. And they take out substantial amounts. In fact, you'll see that families who presumably don't show financial need take out substantial loans. Why is that? Well, this need analysis formula that we all use, all public and private schools in the state, of course every college in the country uses the federal need analysis formula, is a bit severe. So for a family in the middle or upper middle income levels, say a family in the $85,000-$95,000 range, or even into the six figures, where the formula says you should be able to pay that $35,000 cost, they don't think that. And so they are borrowing, in fact, to pay what they don't think they can afford to pay. So that's why you see loans extending up above to the less needy families. And then the final one here is to add student employment that we're aware of. Now, this does not include the summer job or off-campus employment, but this is what we call work-study employment. And so this is how financial aid is put together. My point here is that the state grant program is not the biggest piece of this, but it's a critical part of the packages that we put together for our students. In fact, in 07-08, and you don't have this in the slide, but the amount of federal Pell Grant at the bottom of that chart was about $1.1 million for these 2,000 students. The amount of state grant was about $2.4 million. The amount of institutional grant from the school was about $12 million, and the private aid another $700,000. Now, moving on quickly, things have changed dramatically, and we don't have graphic representation of this, but let me tell you that just in the last 3 years, and this is typical of all private schools and public as well, as you've heard from previous presenters, the number of students who show financial need has increased dramatically. Instead of two-thirds of our students showing need, we're approaching 80% of our students showing need. The amount of need that each needy student shows is increasing as well. So much so that as we fast forward to this current year, and this is estimated data because the year is not yet over, but if you were to look at this chart this year, and we'll put one of these together when the year is over, the bars below the budget line will comprise, as I said, close to 80% of our students. The amount of Pell Grant, instead of $1.1 million, is $2.6 million. The amount of private gift aid is about the same as it was. The amount of institutional gift aid has gone up from $12 million to over $19 million. And the Minnesota State Grant in the second year since 07-08, last year, increased to about $3.3 million, but then because of rationing fell back to about $2.3 million this year. So substantial changes have taken place. We'll go to the next one. These are just, I won't take the time to read through these, but these are kind of fleshing out what I've just talked about. Both the average grant has decreased and the number of students receiving grants have decreased. I'm going to ask Jeff Olson, my colleague, to introduce himself and then show you graphically, using the same kind of model, the effect of the change from full funding in 09-10 of the state grant to ration funding in 10-11.
Welcome.
Mr. Chair, my name is Jeff Olson. I'm Director of Financial Aid at Bethel University.
We'll pass it.
This slide is similar to the slides that Meredith Fergus showed you from the Office of Higher Education, and it looks at the relationship between the parent contribution and the amount of Pell Grant and Minnesota State Grant. It also illustrates the amount of the Achieve Scholarship that was offered to dependent students who are at schools like Bethel that are subject to the four-year tuition cap. And you can see on the bottom portion here, we're looking at the parent contribution, which is one component of the expected family contribution. It's the indicator of how needy students are. So as the parent contribution gets larger, the amount of the federal Pell Grant goes down. So this is the Pell Grant that students receive for the 2009-10 school year. Layer on top of that, the Minnesota State Grant students received during that same year, and this is dependent students. And then this represents the Achieve Scholarship for students that benefited from those dollars in the 9-10 school year. The next slide shows you the impact of the rationing to the state grant and also cuts to the Achieve Scholarship. The Pell Grant in the 2010-11 school year went up slightly. So you can see the difference between the white line and the top of the red, a little bit of an increase, about $200 on the federal Pell Grant. This is the impact of the rationing on the Minnesota State Grant for those dependent students. Those that were the most needy, we had a smaller impact. Over here, you can see students whose family income was in that neighborhood of around $50,000 and above, they lost the state grant completely. In this particular area, you're looking at students who lost state grant of around $1,700 or $1,800 per recipient. This also shows you what the Achieve Scholarship had been. And so students in their first year, if they were Achieve Scholarship recipient, the $1,200 of Achieve plus the $1,700, $1,800 of Minnesota State Grant, it got a double whammy by the loss of the Achieve. You can see the Achieve is right over here just barely because it went to the very neediest group of students. So this shows the impact, especially on the state grant, of the rationing for students in the 10-11 school year.
That's our presentation. We'd be happy to answer any questions you have.
Thank you very much. I don't know if we have any questions for members at this time. It appears we don't. So you did a good job. Thank you very much. And we have Jeff. Is it Albers? Then we'll be hearing from the students. Mr. Albers, welcome to the committee.
Mr. Chair, other members, my name is Jeff Albers. I'm from McNally Smith College of Music right here in St. Paul. I don't have a whole lot to add because I am going last here, but I would like to focus on a couple of things about the state grant program, which makes it special to all the students in Minnesota. Specifically, that it's a student-based grant. The money is given to the students to choose where they want to go to school, and it follows them. They can choose one school one year. It's not the right fit, they can go to another school the next year. The money's given to the student each year. So it's all about access to education and choice. The other thing that wasn't mentioned by my colleagues is the state grant program really helps with retention. You saw the enrollment figures that the state is working with for their projections. They're going up. The first year enrollments are going way up, and we need to keep these students in school so they graduate. That's the end goal. And maintaining a viable state grant program, keep funding it at the levels it's at, is going to help retention. It's going to help these students graduate. It's going to get them out in the workforce on time and be productive members of society. And then the only other thing that I'll say is we're keeping the best Minnesota students in Minnesota attending Minnesota institutions with this program. Students leave the state, they're not going to get the state grant program. And while there's other states that might have nicer state grant programs, our students aren't going to get those either. They're going to get this grant program for our state, and we're going to keep them here if we have a nice, healthy state grant program. It's a big chunk of that pie. After that Pell Grant, there was that state grant. These are students that we can get to come to our schools, and these are students we can get to stay at our schools with a nice, healthy state grant program. That's really all I have to add. They covered it much nicer with lots of big charts than I did, but that's what I have for you.
You did just fine. Thank you very much. And I guess there are no questions, so next we'll be inviting students to come in.
Thank you.
Thomas and Jason are first up, I guess, and
thank you, Chair Norris and members. I am Thomas Trias, sophomore at the University of Minnesota, and majoring in political science. I'm from Spring Grove, Minnesota, in the far southeast corner. But we're happy to kick off the student portion of the committee. I think that's probably the most exciting portion, right, for you guys. So, like Mr. Zetterberg from the U said, over 10,500 students are affected by the state grant program from the U. And I happen to be one of those students. And over this past academic year, I've received a little over $2,600 this year. And mainly because when we were filling out the FAFSA last year, at the beginning of fall in 2010, we had to look back at the last year. And my father lost his job and my mom was going through another job in a transition period, so it was definitely needed, and thankfully now they're both back to work. So next year, hopefully, when we're filling out the FAFSA again, I won't need that money. We'll be able to provide it. So that just gives a really good example, I think, how the state grant program is supposed to work. You know, folks or students who really can't maybe make up that tuition, the rising cost of tuition now, with their parents or their own personal monetary funds, can rely on something like the state grant program, and I think it makes a huge difference, especially in at the University of Minnesota and all over the state. I mean, we have over 83,000 undergrads in the state who are affected by this. That's absolutely huge. Like I said, the state grant program makes it possible for basically all economic backgrounds to go to college. And I think that's absolutely crucial at this time when over 60% of students or of working population in Minnesota need a postgraduate education to find a job. And then in 2020, we're going to see 75% of the population needing a post-secondary education for a job. And we want those jobs here. That's kind of the biggest issue I think you guys are facing right now. And I think it all starts at this level and the higher education level. And I really appreciate all the work you guys are doing. It's going to be tough. And I hope you have the right values in mind when you're negotiating the budget and making sure the state grant program is protected. So I'll hand it over to Jason.
Thomas, before you do that.
Yeah.
Where are you? You're a student at the university. Where is your home?
Well, I'm from Spring Grove, Minnesota. Grove.
Okay, just curious.
Houston County.
Are you?
Mr. Chair,
an editorial comment.
I said it's God's country. I'm from Houston, Minnesota, so 12 miles away. It's just a beautiful part of the state.
It is.
Never been to southeastern Minnesota.
Glad you clarified
Minnesota.
That. Yeah.
Thank you. As is Mr. Chair, Mr. Nelson, Dan Nelson is also from Houston, Minnesota. So,
I have relatives from Houston, Minnesota. So there you go. Are you working besides school? Have you had to work?
Chair, members, I have been an active member of the student government at the university, so I'm mainly involved in that. And
okay.
You know, we get a little stipend just to cover, you know, okay. what we work for. But no, thankfully, you know, since both of my parents are working now, it's become a lot easier to pay. But the period where my father was unemployed, and this was definitely needed. So
okay, well, thanks.
Thank you very much.
Jason, you're next.
All right, Mr. Chairman, members, my name is Jason Glott. I'm a student at the University of Minnesota, and I'm here today to speak on behalf of recipients of Minnesota State Grants. I'd like to begin by saying that I myself am not a grant recipient. I come from a strong family in South Dakota. When it comes to finances, I consider myself fortunate. But this isn't the case for most college students, including two of my best friends at the U, Josh Gist and Greg Goldman. I actually live with Mr. Gist and have been witness to his personal life story for over a year. He's been ever so kind to allow me to tell this story for you guys. Josh comes from Bloomington, Minnesota. His parents divorced when he was age 8, and his mother has single-handedly raised both Josh and his sister. In high school, he was a near 4.0 student and an active participant in sports and business organizations. Josh was dedicated to his studies and was determined to pursue a higher education, a feat that had never been accomplished in his family. A major reason Josh chose to continue his education at the University of Minnesota was because he could afford to do so thanks to Minnesota State Grants. While attending school full-time, Josh works a minimum of 30 hours a week to support both himself and his sister. He's an active participant in various student organizations here with intramurals and club baseball. He has a 3.7 major GPA in finance and is determined to live and stay in Minneapolis for the remainder of his life, pursuing an investment banking career. Greg's story is a little bit different. He was raised on a small dairy farm, which was once thriving but is now currently failing. For his family and Greg, it's becoming difficult to make ends meet. It's a real possibility that they will have to sell their dairy cows within the next few months, effectively eliminating their biggest source of income. His grandparents are now ill with health issues. His sister is in need of expensive jaw surgery, both of which his parents are struggling to finance. Greg's lucky, though, because even as a full-time student, he was able to get $8,500 in scholarships and grants, which he is extremely grateful for. In the words of Greg himself, without the grants I received at the state level, my family would not be able to afford to send me to college in Minnesota. So all day you can hear the facts and figures, but these real-life experiences tell a much better story. And by now it should be clear that significantly reducing grant funding threatens students' opportunities of pursuing a higher education in Minnesota. It was stated earlier that one-third of state grant students at the University of Minnesota would not be here if it wasn't for those grants, just because of the high cost of education. And in my mind, I consider myself a Minnesota. And as Minnesotans, we should not lose our competitive advantage in education solely because of educational costs.
Thank you very much. You said you're from South Dakota?
Yep. Aberdeen.
Aberdeen. Glad you're here. Any questions of these two young men? Thank you for your testimony. Very well done. Yeah. And next we have Andrew and Travis.
Chair Nornis, members, for the record, my name is Andrew Spaeth. I'm the state chair of the Minnesota State University Student Association, and I'm a student at Bemidji State University. Our association represents the over 75,000 students that are attending a state university here in Minnesota. I'm here today to voice our students' strong support for the full funding of the state grant program. This program helps our students and their families afford their investment in a higher education and ultimately in a brighter future. In the MinSU system, this program serves over 57,000 students alone. Personally, the state grant program has a huge impact on my family. As I shared with you last week, I have 4 siblings, and so in my family there are 5 children that are enrolled in a public higher education institution in Minnesota. I can assure you that without the state grant program, this would not be the case. I just ask that you please continue to support the state grant program. This is really a critical investment in the human capital here in Minnesota and in the future of our state. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, members, my name is Travis Johnson, president of the Minnesota State College Student Association, representing MinSU's two-year students. And I'm here with Andrew to also support the full funding of the state grant program. As you know, the program provides a very clear pathway for thousands of students in Minnesota who would otherwise be unable to afford education. And for thousands of students more, it provides enough extra help to allow them to take out smaller loans, maybe take an extra course they wouldn't be able to afford, and to find a balance between school and work. And I think in this time of rising tuition and mounting student debt, the state grant program is very necessary to boost the lives of tens of thousands of Minnesotans. And so I would just stand here with Andrew and ask that you protect the state grant. And I'd be open to answer any questions.
Thank you for both being willing to come and share. You've been here before. We'll see you again probably, too.
I would imagine so, Mr. Chair.
Anytime. Any questions, these two young guys? If not, thank you very much for your testimony. And next, Lynn Berger. Welcome to the committee.
Welcome. Thank you. Chair Norris and the rest of the committee of the members. My name is Lynn Berger. I am a student at Minnesota School of Business in Rochester, Minnesota. I am in the paralegal program. I am one of the 103,000 students that received the state grant program, and I'm very thankful for it, so thank you for the continuing of protecting it. This is my very brief story. I'll try to keep it short. I am what they consider a non-traditional student. I graduated from high school in 1990. I'm from Lake City, Minnesota originally. I have 3 kids. I've been a stay-at-home mom for 9 years. I chose Minnesota School of Business because to me it was very important to go to a career college. I wanted to be able to jump into the workforce as soon as possible. So 2 years is how long my program is going to take me, and I will graduate and hopefully be a strong member of society, paying taxes and continuing to help fund such great programs as the state grant education one. The reason I chose Minnesota School of Business is it's a feeling of home to me. I enjoy the accreditation behind it because it's got a great job placement program. And also, my teachers, my professors are adjunct professors. So they are people who are out in the work field doing what I'm going to be doing. So they teach me, and they support me, and they don't want me to fail. If I did not get the state grant, I probably would not be in school. I mean, seriously, as a mother of three, we are giving people. Mothers are. And I don't want to take money out of my pocket away from my children to help go back to school. I mean, it's like $1,500 a year for me. I mean, that's a chunk of change when you're, you know, a family with a husband that works very hard. And, you know, that can buy a lot of food. It can pay for a lot of health insurance and all the other stuff that we definitely need. And at this point, I'm ready for the next phase of my life. I'm still going to be a mom. I'm going to be a mom the rest of my life, obviously. I have an 8, a 7, and a 2-year-old at home. And, yeah, it's not going to get any easier, but it will get better. So thank you very much for the continued support of the String State Grant Program.
Thank you for being here. And how far away from graduation are you?
I will graduate in December with an associate's degree, and I will work on my bachelor's next year. And also I'm looking into getting an associate's in the criminal justice program also.
Great. Mm-hmm. Congratulations on that.
Thank you very much.
Sounds like hard work, but worth it. Any questions? If not, we have one more person to hear from, and Marquita Walker. You have a half an hour.
You shouldn't tell me things like that. I might actually take up the whole half an hour.
And you can just relax. Just relax. Please identify yourself for the record, please.
All right. My name is Marquita Walker. I'm a junior at Concordia University, St. Paul, Minnesota. Pretty much my hometown is North Minneapolis, so I've been here a majority of my life. I was not born in the state, but raised here, lovely place. All I can say to paint a picture here for you would be the fact that I'm a Minnesota State Grant recipient and a Pell Grant recipient. I'm the second oldest of 4 children. I come from a single parent household. My mother makes less than $40,000 income in a year. Currently, the 3 of us, my oldest sister and my younger brother, are in college. So there's no way that she can contribute to all of our education. So without the Pell Grant and the Minnesota State Grant, I would not be in school at this moment. I do receive academic scholarships from Concordia University. They try to accommodate as best as they can. But I still have to pay out of pocket myself about $1,000 to $2,000 a year. I currently work 3 jobs. I'm a full-time student also. Of the 3 jobs that I work at concessions in our school. Also in our residence building, I work at the front desk, and I am also a peer advisor. So I really try to advocate how important it is for education, for without it, you can't pretty much go anywhere these days. It's almost the equivalent of a high school diploma, probably way back then. I know and I understand that there are many choices for colleges that I could have chosen to go to that may have been cheaper, but I chose to go to Concordia basically for the atmosphere. I didn't want to be a number in any university. I wanted that personal relationship. I wanted to be able to build a network that I thought would be able to benefit me later after I graduate. I'm expected to graduate of spring, May of 2012. If I didn't mention before, I'm a communication studies major. I was hoping to get a job somewhere like TPT as an editor somewhere in the back room, or any kind of news station or something here in Minnesota. That's my dream goal. I love the state that much. Even though a lot of people may not like winter, I actually love the snow. The state grant, the Pell Grant, really helped me to lower and the amount of debt that I would be in, especially with a single parent that can't get loans outside of my federal loans. It's really hard for me to even afford my education. So it's just really good to hear that you guys are very pro-advocate for the state grant, and I just hope that you stay with that decision because you help students like me who are trying to do something that has never been done in my family. Also, I'm the first time, I would be the first in my family to graduate out. Also, I guess if the state and if the Pell Grant, from what I heard, $854, that's a lot. And the Pell Grant went down, pretty much I would not be in school. And that's pretty much all I have to say about that.
Are you able to live at home and go back and forth to school, or do you live on campus?
I currently live on campus. I'm not able to stay at home because I have no transportation to get to school besides the bus. And then that'd be more money out of my pocket, so that means even less money. The money that I do earn now goes straight back into my tuition. So I really don't have a sense of income.
Sure. Questions? We've got time. Well, thank you very much for coming and sharing with us today. Appreciate that. That, I believe, is the last person on our agenda, unless somebody in the audience wants to jump up. We'll take a couple of quick comments. While they're coming up, remember that tomorrow at 5:30 we have a joint gathering between us and the Senate Higher Education Committee for the Board of Regents selection process. Yeah, please identify yourself.
Mr. Chair and members, I'm hoping, my name is Steve Barrett. I am a student at Rasmussen College in St. Cloud, Minnesota. I'm hoping to give you a little different perspective. We've heard a lot about young students with difficulty their families can't afford. I'm the dad that can't afford my daughter's education, and I'm going to school. So the support that the state grant program gives, not only monetary support, but that I know that there are times when people are considering cutting the level of grant participation based on where you go. In other words, the universities get different levels of grants, the private colleges, the career colleges. We're hoping that as you guys consider the budget, you will keep us in mind, the non-traditional students that are out there, that the displaced workers, the parents that are trying to go back to school to re-educate. That's what I'm trying to do. I've been in the manufacturing sector for about the last 16 years. I was a stainless steel sales rep. I made great money, and I was able to save enough money that helped me to get through this first program. But my savings are run out. I'm depending more and more on the state funding, the federal funding. My adjusted gross income last year was $15,000, and that's working two jobs and going to school full-time while doing clinical shifts at the hospital. In March, I will be a licensed practical nurse, and I'll continue my RN at that point. So I just wanted to bring that perspective of a non-traditional student up here and hope as you guys are considering these budget cuts, we know that the cuts need to come. We can see the numbers. We just hope that they're across-the-board cuts and that they don't affect the people that have to make these difficult choices to go to a private college that might cost a little bit more, but will get me in the workforce in a year and a half versus 5 years. Thank you.
Hi, my name is Alicia Riley. I'm also a student at Rasmussen College, and I guess I'll just kind of give you my story. I am a full-time student at Rasmussen. I also work a full-time and a part-time job, and I'm a single parent. Without the state grant, I would probably have to get another job, and I don't have time for that. So I'm graduating a two-year degree in 15 months, so I've taken extra classes to get through quicker, to get out in the workforce sooner, and this grant has meant a lot to me. It's helped me a lot. Like I said, I can't afford to get another job. I don't have the time. My daughter's already asking for my time with her. But I just appreciate the consideration. Like, you know, Steve had mentioned, as far as a private college and a state university, it means just as much to me as it does to a state, you know, college student, that, you know, to help me get out into the workforce as well. So,
thank you for being here.
Thank you.
Hello, Chair Norris and members. I just wanted to put my two cents in there. I used to be a designer. I don't know if you remember Home Value Interiors, but they closed. And now I'm going to nursing. So
please identify yourself.
Michelle Coop.
Okay, sorry.
But now I'm going into nursing, so a completely different field, and I need schooling for that. And I used to make decent money, and I paid my dues, and now I need the grant. So, thank you.
Okay, well, good luck.
Hi, I'm Debbie Dunney. I'm also from the Rasmussen School in St. Cloud, Chair Norris and representatives. My story is quite similar to Steve's. I have 5 grown children. After the last one graduated, I went back to school because I've been in the manufacturing business. I've been in the heavy industry, and my body just can't do it forever. So to save myself, I had to go back to school and learn a trade where I didn't have to use my muscles but my brain. I have 1 daughter in college. I have 1 son in the military. He chose that route to pay for his education. I am a state grant recipient. I also am a work study recipient, and I work 50 hours a week between my job and the work study job. And it's without the state grant, I don't think I would go. I think I would have just decided to wear my body out before my brain. And for that, I thank you. And I'm also, like the other students that talk, as long as this, we know there has to be reduction somewhere, but as long as it's not selective and it's even for everybody, we all stand a better chance.
Thank you.
Chair members, my name is Dalen Carlstead, and I used to go to Bethel University. I went there last year, and I didn't feel it was right. Like, I didn't fit in with the population, and I just felt that I needed to be able to just, I wanted to be able to work full-time as well as go to school and go into a state college. It's really difficult to manage the full workload and go to, you have a class at 11 and you have a class at 1:30, you can't work a full-time job and go to school in that setting, and that's why I chose Rasmussen, so I was able to work full-time as well as go to school and continue on to wherever I'm going. I don't know where that is, but I can work my 40-something hours a week as well as go to school, and without the state and without the grants that are given to me, I wouldn't have chosen Rasmussen because it would have cost much more than it would have been worth. But I just feel that the ability, what Rasmussen offers is better than what's offered at a private school, just because it's special interests, and people like me can do what they want to do as well as work, I guess. But yeah, that's all I got to say, I guess.
Working is good, so thank you very much.
Thank you.
One more testifier.
Well, before I sit down, I want to say thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for letting me speak on behalf of Minnesota School of Business. My name is Nicholas Walter, and I am a full-time student going at Minnesota School of Business in Shakopee, the Shakopee campus, little town, little city, whatever you want to call it. One of the things that is really scaring me is the fact that there might be cuts that are unequal towards private-run colleges or campuses in general. I currently am receiving state grants and such because I'm a single father and I work full-time. I basically go to school Monday through Thursday and work Friday through Saturday. It leaves me little time for my son. However, I understand that education is key. One of the things that I just ask is, as other students have said before, is equal cuts. One of the things I'm worried about is that if they're unequal, they're going to, or I should say that private colleges or campuses are usually looked down upon within the whole education system, and I don't think that's correct personally, because it is to my opinion that not only is Minnesota School of Business able to educate their students in a more professional desire or attire when they go out into the workforce, they're able to make sure that both the students and faculty members are treated as professionals. And one of the things that really really makes me want to strive to be the best is that hands-on opportunity with the teachers or instructors as a student. If I were to be going to a major university, it would be harder for me to maybe be noticed as somebody, as a former student here speaking, discussed about a number. I'd rather not be a number or a leaf upon a tree, but known as a professional person and a person that's actually there trying to educate myself and further the wealth or the economy as the United States. One of the things that I also want to touch on is that Minnesota School of Business, as a private campus, they are all for the learning experience. And essentially, they are living by the motto, we care. And to me, Minnesota School of Business, as a private campus, they put that into effect and into full force to their students and or faculty members. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I'd like to thank all the students that were here today. And the adults, too. And the adult students. We don't leave anybody out. That concludes our hearing today. Reminder again, tomorrow, 5:30, room 5. And that'll be for the Board of Regents selection process. And with that, we are adjourned.